It's Thursday. It's half an hour after we should have started. It must be the big show. Hey.
Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
We're here, all desperately trying to install XBMC and get it to work with Cosmic Vibes' brand new show come network add-on. If you haven't been sharing it after Frivolity, it's beta night here tonight because we're trying out something that one of the listeners, Charlie's done for us. If you want to know more about it, follow him on Twitter. He's at Cosmic Vibes. And send him a wee note, and he will send you the instructions about how to install XBMC and how to install our channel. And when you get it right and it's working, it's brilliant because it scrapes all the RSS feed. You can get all the past shows, and you can also then follow us on the live channel as well without having to go to Justin. So you can have two windows open, chat. And
bonus.
Beautiful. We're here for the week's technology. I've got a fantastic panel. It's going to be great. And here we go. Starting us off as usual, Jimmy Boy Hart.
Hello, I'm Jimmy Boy Hart.
How you doing, mate?
I'm very well, thank you. And good evening, viewer. Good evening, listener. Yes, very well, actually. I think I've got over any kind of cold that was besetting me over the past week. And I'm feeling all right. And this evening has been really great fun because we've been installing. I've got my Android tablet. I switched off the only install proper applications. I went to a website, downloaded a dodgy APK. I've been playing with technology this evening. It's been great fun. And I was playing with some earlier as well, which we will, I dare say, go into. So I've been having fun.
Life on the edge. Well done, James. Mm-mm-mm. Superb, mate.
Can't get it to work, though.
No, my problem is I can't see the edge. I just fall off. Next to him, having some woes with XBMC, but we'll get there in the end. It's Jeff Gamet. How you doing, mate?
I'm doing pretty good. I decided to get over my frustration with not being able to get XBMC working and just move on to the bourbon.
Good man. See, that's the way tech should work.
It's how it works in my world.
Tech support by Jack Daniels.
Or in this case, Maker's Mark.
Or Maker's Mark. There we go. Next to Jeff, Sarah, with Nexus 10.
With Nexus 10, sans alcohol, though.
Oh, well, that's pathetic.
I know, it's not good, is it? But no. back in Blighty.
Well done, girl. And last but by no means least, the unforgettable. I'm so sorry, dude. I am so sorry.
You forgot me on the intro, and then when you published the show, you forgot the description.
And he put me on twice, even better.
You know, if it helps any, he misspells my name every week, so, you know, there's that.
That's true. And he left Sarah out as well.
And now we're all talking over Carl and Carl letting him get a word in edgeways.
I have no excuses whatsoever. I'm just crap. I can't apologise enough, mate. I'm so sorry. It's bear no reflection to whether I appreciate or don't appreciate you. It's just the fact I'm useless. I've got porridge for brains. There we go. If I only had a brain. Someone should make a song out of that. The week in technology.
Never catch on.
I wouldn't know. The week in technology. What a week it's been. We've had some reviews. Thank you for those people that have. If you'd like to leave us a review, then go to iTunes and give us one of those full written reviews, not just the 5-starry thing, because full written reviews, very good to read out and fun, and B, they help our placement in iTunes wonderfully. So if you can, I want to try and get us up by the bash to well into the triple figures for all the shows. So thanks very much to those that have. First one's from Squaw Island. They said, this show runs the gamut from nerd to casual tech.
The Jeff gamut.
I would be casual techie. Host and guests relate to the real world and make you feel right at home. Pull up a chair, mate. That's from the US store, I think.
Thank you.
Ad Furlow said, really enjoy this podcast, light-hearted and fun and drunk. A fan of all the shows on British Tech Network, keep up the good word. 5 stars all day long. Cheers. Thank you ever so much. Wonderful, wonderful. And we've had a letter as well.
Ew.
Dear sir, like a Times letter. Sir, And it's actually from Teresa. And James, I'm not sure whether you're going to get a kick in here or what, but hi, Ewan. Just finished listening to the big show from last Thursday. I heard James talking about two-factor authentication and needing to reauthorise things with each use of the apps on his phone. No, no, no. Not at all. If it was that much work, almost no one would ever be able to use it. It's not like signing into a work VPN or something. It's overthinking it. Huge kudos to Google for getting this right and making it very simple. I set up the two-factor authentication for Gmail and Dropbox. Once your applications are authorized, they stay authorized until you revoke access via the web browser. If your phone or other mobile device is lost or stolen, you go to the website and revoke access to the apps on the missing device, and nothing else gets the nothing else changes on the other devices. I use the Google Authenticator app on my iPhone to generate codes instead of getting a text message. You can use the Authenticator app for Google and for Dropbox. They let you scan a QR code with the app to set it up. They also give you a set of emergency codes in case you can't get to your phone. And unfortunately, Dropbox does not play as nicely as Google does. I hope they can make adding devices easier. I end up turning off the two-factor authentication, logging the device into the service, then turning the two-factor back on just to save on hair tearing. revoking via the website is much more simple, though. I expect Evernote, oh, that's jumped a lot, will have an implementation like Google, and it will use the Google Authenticator too. Anyhow, Google has a short vid on how to do it, and how it all works, 3.5 minutes long on YouTube, and I'll put the link in the show notes. Wish I could have been in the chat room for the show. That time on Thursday is a no-go for me right now. P.S. Google has my cell phone number, and I've never received any rogue sales texts from them at all, or anyone else. That's not
well, the day is young.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. It's still 2013. Very quickly to respond to your point, Teresa, I take them all on board, especially the hair pulling out thing. When I was using it, it must have been about sort of 12 to 18 months ago now, there were some applications which did not have the Google applications, in fact, which did not have the second stage of authentication. And a perfect example of that is Google Reader. So to be able to log into Google Reader, you couldn't use your normal Gmail account password. You couldn't use the two-factor authentication. So you had to go to the website and generate a one-off password for that application. And then you typed it in. And if you're lucky, it remembers it. But then you have to do that on your other device. I've got three devices I use, bit of a faff. And you have to either, once you've typed the password in, you can't get the password back. It's a kind of one-shot password. Then if your phone breaks, you have to reinstall it, which I've had to do on my Nexus S quite a few times. You realize how many of those applications you've got. And there were 4 or 5, and it was a right old pig. So I maybe they've come along in the last few years. Maybe they've just gone, right, we can't get two-factor authentication working on that. I know what we'll do. We'll retire it. And that's made it all a little easier.
Excellent. That's it. Thank you for the letter, Teresa. If you've got
Teresa. Cheers.
If you've got any points to make, any butts to kick, you send us that letter, whoever you are.
We've got our pants down and ready.
I believe I chatted with Teresa on app.net earlier today. So, hi, Teresa.
Teresa's great, but she's not here. So.
No, she'll be here later.
Not a good time of the day.
She listens to the show, presumably.
Yes.
She's great. She made so, it all
you know, wibbly wobbly, timey wimey.
You made it all Absolutely. The way over from the bash. The bash last year from Beatown, didn't she?
Bash is the 6th of July, Jeff. If you want to come over, you're more than welcome.
July 6th, I should put that on my calendar.
Yep.
Okay.
The week in tech, HP has patched a serious printer vulnerability. I've got to say, I read that story and I stopped reading because I lost interest. But I thought to myself, how serious could a printer vulnerability be? Did you just get a picture of someone else's ass coming out or something?
No. I could see where that might be an issue.
Like the photocopier at Christmas type thing.
It protects you from printing out really stupid emails.
Oh, that would be good. That's a plug-in. I've got to be a plug-in.
Can you imagine cybercrime being that all these HP printers just jar into life? You know, some guy presses a button, they all start printing out reams and reams. And it just basically frightens people. Now, that is terrorism, my friend.
And they spawn legs and start walking around the office, yeah.
Because of this vulnerability. HP, for shame.
I will consume the world's paper unless you give me $1 trillion.
You know, you'd think the printers would be smart enough just to make their own. I mean, they're printers.
Good point.
Microsoft has had a few access issues if you've got a Hotmail or an Outlook account. It's not been great, unfortunately. They talked about inept firmware updates and servers overheating. So which of those stories is true, I'm not sure, but there you go. Google I.O. conference tickets went on sale, and 50 minutes later they were all gone. Tickets started at $900.
What do you reckon they'll get this year under their seats?
Really? Of course. Well, yeah, of course it's a giveaway, isn't it? What do you think they're going to get? Google Glasses, not for $900.
Yeah, you know what's going to be under the seats?
Pixel?
Your own copy of Google Reader. Oh.
my money's on
Google Pixel.
Yeah. That's one thing, possibly.
Okay. We'll have to wait and see. I can't wait now. Honest.
Well, have you got an invite?
No.
Right.
If you want a ticket, you're going to have to look on eBay. The breathometer app for the smartphone has come out. This thing is a plug-in for your smartphone, and before you drive home, you can blow in it and find out whether you should be driving home or not.
They should send each one of us one of these.
What's the point?
Why don't you invite me onto the show and put this new story in?
No, I'm passing no comments, Carl. It's not. There's no. Definitely not. The Pirate Bay founders are have been told by the European Court of Appeal that they're stuffed. Their enforcing ban in Sweden, I think it was, is in there. There's been unfortunately, Ukrainian attack dolphins have got loose.
Don't go swimming, kids.
These are like sharks with freaking lasers. Okay, but they're attack dolphins. Apparently, the Ukraine has been training dolphins to scupper attempts to build things underwater and to attack enemy divers. And three of them got the scent of a female in season, and they just sodded off. So there you go.
Pay attention, Sarah. If you find yourself falling overboard next time you catch the ferry to Ireland. You could be scuppered. You could beware of dolphins, yes.
Truth serum is going to be used to prove insanity. So, again, that's one of those stories.
Not one for the show.
No, exactly. So it's.
Hang on a minute. Can I delete the in on the front of that?
What? In what? Insanity. Well, no, so are you insane? And it's like the truth serum is going to make you sane enough to say, yes, I am. there's a loop that's going to go on there, isn't there?
This is actually big news where I am.
Oh, come on.
Because this happened where I am.
Oh, right. Tell us more.
Yeah. So, all right. So the whole shooting with, what's his name? James Holmes happened at a movie theater in Aurora. So for those of you that know your geography, look at Colorado, and where you see Denver, Aurora is stuck right up against it on the right or on the east. And so it's a big city connected right up to Denver. And this is where that movie theater shooting happened. And so it's been big news for everyone out here because, well, it's local and it's a horrible tragedy. And so we're all following it. And Mr. Holmes appears to be just flat out crazy, or at least he's doing a really good job of acting that way. And so now they've decided that that they want to use drugs, which I find quite ironic because drugs are often involved in putting people in a situation where they do crazy stuff like shoot up a movie theater. But they're going to use drugs to try and see if they can get more information out of him that will help them better determine whether or not he is insane, because that will determine whether or not he is competent to stand trial. And what he's hoping, and his legal team is hoping, is that they can prove that he's insane, making him incompetent for standing trial, which means that he does not go to trial and his case just basically stalls. And he won't get to go free and walk the streets, but he'll remain under supervised medical care in a jail or a lockdown medical facility somewhere. And for him, this would be a much better prospect than going to trial, being found guilty, and then being thrown into the regular jail population, because there's kind of a code of ethics and conduct among jail prisoners, as odd as that sounds. And if you do something that's a crime against children, and in this case, children were shot, you will
you find
yourself...
You don't have an easy time of it, do you?
No, you don't. No, you don't. So that's something that he really, really wants to avoid. And an insanity plea would get him a deal that would keep him out and away from the general prison population. And so there you go. That's a big thing. It's like nightly news out here in Colorado.
But it's frightening stuff as well, though, because it's one thing for somebody to pretend they're insane and to require a truth theorem to counter the effects of that wanting an easy ride. And it's a completely other thing that somebody may have a mental illness which is brought about by any kind of external force, which to the extent whereby if they don't take their medication, they become mentally ill. But if they take their medication, they're perfectly normal and they could fail a truth serum test because actually, if they don't take their medication, they are insane. So it's a thin end of a really quite dangerous wedge.
Well, I don't know how it fits in the mm-hmm. States as well, but in the UK, you don't want to enter an insanity plea. Because if they do, what you're giving is the state the license to lock you up indefinitely without trial. Because that's it. An insanity plea means you go to a sanatorium, you go to a correctional facility, and if they choose never to try you for the crime and never to let you out, you're in there forever. And you will die in there if they choose to let you do that. They don't need any trial to keep you in.
Because the whole point of insanity is it is not rehabilitatable from, if that's a word.
Yeah. Exactly.
Sure. And that's a potential in a situation like this. But if you're in a position in the United States where you know that you will be locked up, then you start weighing the pros and cons and decide where are you best locked up, in a facility where you become everyone's bitch, or a facility where you're drugged and kept relatively safe.
Mm. But if you can think about what's logically the best thing to do, how can you be insane?
Exactly.
That's a good point.
And the last story, which is the most important of all of them, and they've kept me from it for long enough, the EU Parliament has had a vote and they've decided not to ban internet porn. Yes.
That's outrageous.
Result.
However, I'd like to result. Say I only go to the porn sites for the articles.
Yes. And the car reviews.
Wait, they have car reviews?
Oh, yeah.
Carl, you'd be quite happy if they banned all images.
Say what?
Well, no, because you get pictures of the cars.
Yeah, no, the car reviews are excellent because there's usually young girls in the back showing what the leg room's like. So,
is that what it's called, you?
I presume that's what they're doing. Is they're demonstrating leg room. So.
Yeah, okay. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm assuming that the Parliament, when they started really looking at what they were proposing, there were a few people that said, wait, you mean us too? Oh, no.
Exactly. It would be everywhere. All of Europe, not just the Parliament buildings. There we go. Mm. And we've got a new Pope, of course. Pope, I'm having the Malvinas back. Yeah, righto, mate. No, you're not. Stay off topic, telling you. No, the real news then. Should we do this week?
This week.
He's doing his little jingle.
This week in Melissa Meyer that James talked over there, so I've presumed it's finished, so...
Sorry. Hit me out.
No, we're looking deep in Marissa's eyes.
This week in Melissa Meyer, apparently she's in a bit of pup over her recruitment procedures because she's been turning down a lot of really good people that have come forward from the Silicon Valley royalty, and because they haven't been to a prestigious university, they've been chucked out of her room, and she insists on interviewing everyone who's going to start at Yahoo. I'm not sure if that's like the toilet cleaners as
she
well
won't have
or what,
anything, but- any time for anything else. I mean, recruitment takes so it is mind-bendingly dull.
Well, I think they've probably gone through all the vetting stuff, and it's like, okay, we'd like to offer you the job, but you need to talk to Melissa first. And Marissa goes, nah.
Absolutely.
But they're saying that she's taking up to 8 weeks to make a decision on one person as well.
Wow.
Well, so she's creating quite a bit of a backlog.
She is raising a young child, be fair.
There is an element of control freakery here, isn't there?
It is. Yeah, it's like coming to the fore. It's just very Steve Jobian, so to speak.
It is a bit of micromanagement, I have to say, and I'm quite surprised because me being her number one fan, I thought that even that shocked me. That was micromanaging beyond belief.
I mean, you have to consider though, with the British tech shows, Ewan, the amount of effort you put into the recruitment is second to none at all. I'm second to none.
What are you doing tomorrow? Yeah, you're in.
That's the first time you had me on the show, you didn't even know who I was. It was just,
I did know, because you'd been on the Max show before with Kelly. I watched that episode. Okay, I know exactly who you were.
That's brilliant.
If you're not doing anything tomorrow, do you want to come on the Max show? Because Kelly can't come on.
That was a good interview.
Since I've been doing the bookings, I've cocked it up on a regular basis. I'm awful. And this week, I've lost for tomorrow's Max show Will Green, Andy Anatko, Kelly, and Richard Harkness was coming on as a stand-in, and he's gone as well. So,
to me, he lost them. That's very careless.
I'll look at my schedule right now and let you know if I'm available tomorrow.
Good man. It's 3:30 our time, so whatever that is.
I'm not sure Andy and that coach should be on the Max show anyway.
Well, no. He should. It's all right, anyway.
Not from a phone point of view. He's gone over to Android.
Oh, well, yes, but I'm getting tempted myself. Okay, mate. It's 3:30 in the afternoon. I shouldn't do bookings in the middle of the shows, really, should I?
What time that is mountain time? Because I think I've proven today I'm completely incapable of handling time zone math.
We'll do
it. Is it Johnny from Johnny Winter who sent the link to time.is? Now that's
good. Fucking brilliant.
Right, there you go. That's all you need. You got it. That was Melissa's Miles week. Yeah.
Sorry about talking over it.
The thing I don't understand about Melissa Myers and Yahoo is I don't understand what I know she's trying to save the company, but I don't think personally it can be saved. I've never gone back to Yahoo since I've left it. I mean, I don't know if has anyone else in this little conversation here gone back to Yahoo in the last month and checked.
Only
anything?
Flickr. Flickr is the only Yahoo product I ever use.
Except Flickr.
And Yahoo Answers.
Yeah, that's because they come up with Google as soon as you search.
That's true. Yeah, if you ask them a question which is more difficult than who's the new Pope, you get a Yahoo Answers with some half-witted response.
No, but I'm
have never messed with
Flickr
with Yahoo Answers.
Huh. What are they bringing to the table now? Unfortunately, I mean Yahoo was big in its time. Let's because I remember the adverts for Yahoo and all that stuff. But
beautiful.
I just think it's past. I mean, I've never gone back. I've never seen a need to go back. Other people have come along and filled the void that Yahoo created, sort of thing, by just going a bit weird.
Yahoo created a void. It's like, because you tend to leave a void, but Yahoo was so bad that they created a void.
They did, because you just never went back and used their service.
No, you're right.
Sucked in a way.
Yeah, I mean, since Google's been around, before Google, then yes, we all used it for search. But, I mean, unfortunately, they didn't capitalize on that while they had the market share. And, that's it, gone, kaput. I think we discussed before, I think, we think they should, I certainly think they should focus on some of their products like Flickr instead of worrying about the Yahoo brand as much.
Charlie in the chat room saying, don't forget, a lot of people still have a Yahoo email address.
Oh, I do. It's my activation email in case I ever need to activate something else. Or it's my junk email as well. I put a load of junk stuff there.
So there's probably a lot of people still using that. And I thought I saw something where there was something like 28% of the search engine traffic was still with Yahoo.
Bloody hell. That
seems a bit high.
I thought that was high, but it is ridiculously silly figures. Go ahead, Jeff.
Oh, okay. I want to go on record saying I had to use Google to find Yahoo Answers. The irony is not lost on me. I typed in what seemed like a very simple and straightforward question to me, which is, does the Pope smoke? And
the Pope. Then,
yeah, well, I saw the Cardinal picture, whereas the Elvis Cardinals smoking after they picked the Pope. So clearly that's a very moving experience.
Say, was it good for you?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And so I thought, well, geez, does the Pope smoke? So I type it into Yahoo Answers. And the first thing it does is tell me to log in. So I'm going on record right now saying Yahoo Answers is total crap.
Johnny in the chat, Boo in the chat room, stick him on a bonfire, he'll smoke.
So the stock price of Yahoo having gone up from $16 last October to $23 this March, is that solely down to the fact that everybody loves Marissa Myers?
Yes.
Absolutely.
And it was so low to begin with, I think.
Yeah, it didn't help.
It's that honeymoon period, I still think, that she's got.
She's done 7 months so far, and I think it's peaked at 24 and it started at 15-ish, something like that, ish.
No, but all I'm saying is I'm still trying to work out, I'm trying to see from the various stories I get, because I don't know her personally, you know, what her goal is for the company, because I still don't see it. It seems to be like cleaning up little bits here and there, but nothing big. Unless she's working on something behind the scenes that none of us were aware of.
I think it's quite possible. I mean, you know, she may well have some plans, but the big things take time to launch, don't they?
Yeah, you'd like to think so, but I mean, I'm her number one fan, mate, and even I'm starting to run out of patience.
Well, I think the thing is, you need, if you know, if you're talking about a big change in terms of turning around the company, it's going to take a while. I think you need to give her best part of 18 months before we actually start asking those sort of questions.
Is she making it ready to sell onto Google? Coming from Google, I guess.
Now, they sold out to Microsoft before Marissa came on board anyhow.
But didn't they sell out, did they say?
They pulled back from the brink, so to speak.
Yeah, and really, Yahoo's search engine now is Bing. So that would be interesting to see if Google could buy Yahoo because of Microsoft's involvement in the company.
Ooh. I don't see it. I was joking, but you never can tell. You never can
That's tell. True. You never can tell.
Right, the other stories then, because we got rid of Marissa Meyer. That feature won't be going forever, by the way, because she's bound to piss me off at some point. Should we start with Google Reader? Because, I mean, that's hot off the press today.
Please, I have some thoughts about Google Reader.
Google Reader's a dead dog. Ruff, it's gone.
Or will be in July.
There was a great comment in the chat room. I need to find it from Fritz. I can't find it. But it's basically about Google Reader going, don't let the door hit you in the RSS on the way out. Very good.
Very good.
Yes, excellent. Google Reader's going, James, your thoughts, please.
Well, the first thing I thought was, the reason that Google are removing it is, for one thing, I think the CEO, or the guy who's running Google Reader, is moving over to the X project, which is Google Glass and self-driving cars. So obviously it's not the cool bleeding edge of development anymore. They're not interested in it. Secondly, they're saying that there's declining usership. The question I have, and I would love to do a survey, maybe to the chat room and the panel, is how many people actively use Google Reader? Not love, but actively use it. For me, I use it on occasion. I absolutely love it. I passionately love it because it is the most neat way to organize my RSS feeds. And when I'm doing a bit of research for the show before it, I sit down at the table with my tablet and I scroll through it because it's so quick to get BBC, Engadget, you know, all of the RSS feeds you could possibly want in one place. So who else actively uses it?
I use it every week when I'm looking for shows, stories for the media show. I don't actually use the Google Reader itself, but I use apps that pull the information from Google Reader. So I have no idea how I'm going to fill the void when it goes away. Hopefully things will pop up in the meantime.
Yeah.
I mean, I use it daily to look for jobs.
Let's sit there. Oops, boss. Sorry.
For me, Google. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry.
Sorry, yeah, latency, but things like Zite and a few other reader programs, apps that I've totally forgotten off the top of my head, they use Google Reader as their sort of backbone, and then they present the information in a more palatable way, which I can then skip through really easy. And hopefully someone's going to come along to fill that void, maybe Yahoo Reader.
That would be good, wouldn't it?
Yahoo Reader. Well, actually, there is a... no, that's the wrong thing. I've got the wrong story. Go ahead, Jeff. What were you going to say?
Okay. Reader is the backbone for all of my RSS needs. And I'm actually using Reader, which is R-E-E-D-E-R, on my Mac, iPad, and iPhone. And Google Reader synchronizes all of my content between those apps. So having that break is going to really suck. And I think it's total crap that Google is doing this to us. They don't owe us anything. They gave us a free service and they're taking it away. And that's what happens when we get free services. The crappy part is that they worked very hard and very intentionally to destroy the independent RSS reader market and put developers in a position where they had to use Google service as their back end. And now they've yanked that out from us and are creating a void very quickly. When they could have waited 6 months instead of giving us, what is it, 9 weeks? So that really annoys me. Now, the developers of Reader for iOS and OS X have said, don't worry, they're going to update their app so it no longer needs to rely on Google Reader. So I'm not going to be out of luck, which is good. But what happens to all those NetNewsWire people that signed up and bought NetNewsWire and then were forced to switch over to using Google Reader on the back end? And now they're losing that. Those people got really screwed.
This is the problem, I suppose, when you rely on things that are free. I mean, when they disappear, like you said, no one owes you anything because they didn't charge you for it in the first place. The only thing I would think is that Google have made their money on it, in inverted commas. It's dragged people in, it's running a service, other people are scraping stuff off it. Is it consuming that much resource that they need to do anything other than just leave it be, not develop it, not take it any further, or let it go out to open source or something like that, perhaps?
Maybe. My guess is that when they looked at the math, they weren't getting the return on the investment that they wanted. And so that's good enough just to say kill it.
Well, what was the return that they were expecting on the investment, do you think, then, Jeff? Because it's a free product, so...
It's a free product, so my guess is that the return was based on inline ad revenue.
Right.
And... Yep. Yeah, and it wouldn't surprise me if most of the people that were using the service weren't actually using it in a web browser and instead were using third-party apps may not have allowed for those ads to show up.
And Sarah, just for completeness?
I hardly used it, so I can't really comment on it. It's just why I've not really said anything about it.
And I think the chat room also correlates it with that they're using other products, Instapaper. We've got... Zite has already been mentioned. So yeah, they're NewsRack. The point that keeps coming back to me is that these content aggregators actually give no benefit, really, apart from giving access to the data to other sites. It's an aggregator of ostensibly, yeah, maybe some of it's paid for, but most of it is free data. And if you never go to the site as a consequence of getting the aggregated data. So if it's, I mean, some people are very clever about the way they'll only put a little bit of a teaser or a headline on you. You go, oh, that's interesting, and you'll click on it and go onto the site. But a lot of the time, you're not interested in that. You skip, 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 skip. And so you never leave the Google Reader kind of ecosystem. And nobody makes any money out of that. So I'm wondering if, from their point of view, it's not so much that it didn't make the money they were expecting. It's the fact it's actually taking money away from people who would probably... the benefit them if they were more kind of if they could generate more profit for.
Do you reckon as well, because Google getting a lot of stick in Germany and France, places like that, for scraping people's news sites, and it was I think it was Google Reader doing that primarily as well.
Didn't old what's his name Murdoch have a bit of a dig about it, and because they were scraping Wall Street Journal, and that's when he shoved all of the information behind a power and said basically bollocks, you're not having it.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously a problem because you've got you know, providers who are actually providing content that's being served up. And I know that obviously and James mentioned the BBC, but obviously they don't serve up ads. But if you're outside the UK, they do. And obviously people aren't seeing those ads, which is why you can understand why the content providers are certainly going to have an issue with that.
So the question that comes back to me is, does this mean the death of RSS as a mainstream means of aggregating information, not as a format for translating stuff, because ostensibly it's just XML and it's a particular kind of, you know, you have Atom and you have the different formats of it. But is aggregation of data through XML dead?
Well, it is from Google, but I don't think someone will jump into that area, I reckon.
I wouldn't be surprised to see Reader come out as an open source thing. Perhaps they'll give away the source code for it. Or I can't see RSS dying as a principle, though, surely. Yeah.
No. Because we need RSS for podcasts and loads of other things.
We need it for podcasts, definitely. And any AV content, that's an absolute no-brainer. But when you've got the likes of, you know, the news media particularly, that are trying to find ways of actually making their market, particularly the newsprint sites, like newspapers and magazines and stuff, and they need to get people to see ads. That's the only way they're actually going to generate revenue, as their print editions start to reduce. This kind of thing takes away from what could be their potential model for actually generating revenue. So I think you can understand it. And, probably they're not going to want to allow RSS feeds. They're going to want to force people to actually go to the site so they can serve them up ads.
This is the point, though, Sarah. Will they stop putting the little RSS button at the top right-hand side of the screen here you go, it's easy?
I could see that happening for exactly the reason about the fact that they're not able to serve up ads.
If Google is shutting Google Reader down because they can't serve ads, isn't it a bit ironic that using Google Reader stops you from seeing the ads on the original site?
That's the whole point. Yeah. Mm. But that's the whole point from the content provider's point of view. When, particularly with like traditional newsprint, they're desperate to try and find ways of actually make their online model work. And serving up ads to you is a way of doing that. The RSS feed is great from our point of view because it means we don't have to see those ads.
Mm.
Sooner or later, these news sources are going to disappear because they haven't got a model where they can produce a revenue stream to keep them going. If everyone's using an RSS feed to read it, then the ad advertiser are going to say, well, I'm sorry, but most people aren't actually viewing the ads because they're not viewing the content through your site.
Chat room's chipping in here. Johnny says, I don't see that Google Reader disappearing is going to affect RSS at all. That's the reason I don't use RSS readers, says Batwench. There's too much crap in them as well. Murdoch hates search engines and RSS feeds, says Bookery. It's pretty much split. I mean, I think it's the people. The interesting thing here in the chat room from the comments, and would echo what Carl's and Jeff are saying, I'm not going to miss Google Reader. I'm going to miss what it gave all the applications that I use. And that's the point, is that Google have ended up creating something everyone used brilliantly and that no one used them directly, just like Google Plus. And there was a point earlier on in the chat room, if it's getting rid of it because of lack of use, why isn't Google Plus gone? Wave went the way, didn't it? And Buzz. Good point. It's all gone.
Because they can get something out of it. Just on a slight tangent, I know, but the removal of an online service, I mean, what happened this afternoon was I thought, right, I'm going to see if I can self-host this, because if I'm not paying for it and I'm reliant on someone else to provide it, why the hell don't I provide it myself? And I've got a Linux box at home and I install something called Tiny RSS. It took a bit of fiddling to get going, but now I get practically the same experience on my Android tablet as I did before. I just click on it and I have to log in because obviously it's a public site for me. But I've got feeds there that are hosted on my home server. This brings me on to the fact that Hotmail stopped working during the week, denying email to millions of people. Even something trivial. I was around my in-laws over the weekend for Mothering Sunday, and we wanted to see what was on television. We all went to our Android tablets to look at the Virgin Media TV app, and BBC One had no listings associated with it. So a free service that Virgin Media provide wasn't working. And how much of this stuff do we rely on without questioning it? And how pissed off are we going to be when it stops working? If it stops working, because the plug could be pulled for good reasons, as in they don't want to do it anymore, like Posterous, or bad reasons, as in it stops working because the servers overheat at any time. We're just going to get disgruntled, aren't we?
Mm. I think the problem that a lot of service providers have got, providers of entertainment, podcasting as well, and RSS and that kind of stuff, is not so much that the adverts can't be placed on it. It's the problem that there is too much analytics going on with advertising that says, if you look at that ad, that's the response that you got from that ad from this many people. And they're looking at the response that they get from advertising rather than seeing it as a holistic process. I'm over here, I'm over here, I'm over here, I'm over here. And because they've seen me four times in four different medias, you suddenly go, oh, yeah, I'll... And the ones that get that are the ones that are successful using new media to advertise their products. And the ones that don't come in, place a couple of ads, don't get a response and walk away because their metrics say no one clicked the thing, so why should I pay for it? I'm away. And that's not the way that advertising works. Advertising works on the principle of triggering people's subconscious. They walk past the billboard, they see something that flicks something that they read earlier on, saw earlier on an RSS feed, saw on an inline ad. And people aren't getting that.
The question I had, I was reading something about Groupon over the week. I think there was a sort of a small news story about them. They turned down an offer to be bought by Google for something like $1 million, which at the time I think was fairly small, because the guys wanted to focus on making stuff. And then I saw the profit and loss graph of Groupon, and only for about 14 days in the last 2 years have they actually turned a profit. And you kind of wonder, for these companies, are they the anti-Apple? Apple are making proper margins and proper profits. Are these guys just slowly drifting into debt until the point they reach the point where you're just going, oh, I can't sustain this. I'm not starting the upward slope. And so all many of the services we're using day by day are masking an enormous debt, which is growing and growing and growing until they just go, nope, can't do this anymore, and either get bought out by a larger company, and therefore the service gets removed or sort of incorporated into what they're doing, like Twitter have done with a number of products, or they just go, nope, can't do this anymore, and it stops.
Carl, you had a point there.
That's what the venture capital stuff isn't about, isn't it? They like Twitter's never made any money, as far as I'm aware. It's just purely existing on the money people have decided to invest in it. At some point, they're going to want their money back.
Sorry.
That's where we are exactly with Facebook right at the moment. That's why we see them doing different things like increased advert size and so on and so forth. As I said the other week, that I believe is being driven by the investors saying, come on, guys, we need to actually prove that there's a revenue stream here. Otherwise, we're out of this.
Absolutely right. I tell you what, there's loads of, because I like Apple products. So there's loads of investor stories about Apple at the moment. Like analysts say this, they're going to produce a watch, they're going to produce a telly, they're going to produce a car. And it's all, the whole tech industry seems to be at the moment totally being taken over by these Wall Street people. And it seems to be corrupting this sort of realm of interest that we all have, because most of the stories, most of the rumors that are coming out now are all from analysts, not tech people, but they're from money people who want to get their stories out and influence the stock, buy the stock, sell the stock, whatever they need to do to make their money. And they don't give a fig about the technology business whatsoever. It's just the latest, in my eyes anyway, it's just the latest thing for them to climb onto, make a buck.
Thank you for stepping away from that word.
I think you're absolutely right, Carl.
Okay, and then to bring it full circle, let's go back to what we were doing before the show started. We were installing applications on our own devices to be able to do what we wanted them to do. Are we too reliant on these online services to provide these services because we can't be bothered to code our own?
No, things like XBMC. Okay, XBMC is created by people who love to do what who love to do what they're doing. They love.
Yeah, but what we
never
had to do
for any money.
Yeah, but the point is, what we did is we installed it manually on our own machines and configured it, and we now have a copy of XBMC that hasn't just been sort of delivered from an app store. We press a button and it magically comes served to us. We've downloaded it. We've configured it. We've played with it. We now understand how it works because we've had to go through the iterations with services like Hotmail. Who among us have actually had to? I think we're probably in the wrong audience to be able to say, because some of us have. Who's actually created their own web-based mail client? It's not easy to do.
No.
And that's the point I'm guessing I'm making, because people rely on these things. They don't even understand how it all works in the back end and how much power is being used, how many servers are required to be able to cope with the data it's being that's being expected of them, especially as services are intended to grow.
But the world's always well. I don't know how a plane works when I get onto it, but I just trust it will. I mean, I paid for a service, granted. I don't know how my car works, really. I know the basics, but...
But you pay for all those things, Carl.
That's true, but in a way, we're also paying... For example, you're paying for your machinery that you're using. If you went and bought a computer, like a Mac or something, you paid for that. You expect it to work. I see what you're saying. You're saying the services that we use are the ethereal,
and those services and those services could disappear at a moment's notice.
But I think that's where open source model really really works, because it's being created for people by people who know and care about what they're doing and have a desire for something, and they put it out there so anybody can support it. So it's not going to get pulled overnight.
I have to say that the problem with open source, if you're not able to manipulate the code of that open source, it can be a bit more than a bit Wild West. It's a bit more.
I agree.
A bit more Custer's last stand, unfortunately.
I agree. And the thing about open source is it is getting better. If you look at what Ubuntu has done with Linux, and they are turning it into a much more, and there's more Linux flavors and stuff that are actually becoming very easy to install. And it is migrating into that space a lot better so that the mainstream can adapt it more. And, you know, the beauty, it's the same, you know, even with things that you pay for. I mean, think about how we're at the mercy of Microsoft I'm talking about the large percentage of people that use PCs. You know, if Microsoft say you will use Windows 8 because we're going to pull support for everything else, then everybody's going to have to use it that has a, you know, that use Windows, because they absolutely have no choice. It doesn't matter whether you pay for a service or not. If it's done by a commercial organization, the same particular thing applies. I mean, you know, from a Windows point of view, I think Windows 2000, it was the best product that Microsoft ever produced. Absolutely no chance of using it because it does not support it. It's not developed and so on, because Microsoft decided they didn't want to do it.
I think the problem comes in the fact that there is a culture. We've always talked about the culture of creation of free stuff, free music, free videos, stealing stuff. I think there's a culture within advertisers of cheap advertising, because they can say, we didn't get the clicks, therefore we're not paying you. We didn't get the clicks, therefore we'll pay you a lesser amount. And you're in a situation now where it's just going to be impossible to break that curve. So,
But there's some kind of social stepped away from it. There's some kind of social psychology, which means there is a gap of understanding between the advertisers, the marketers, and the service providers, and then the public, who just go, "Come on, where's our free stuff?" And it's almost that they don't realise that the free stuff depends on the advertisers. Is it going to all collapse, because we will end up funneling the advertisers will be funneling into the bigger and bigger markets, so that we have the huge. Like we have the Heart Network, the global radio network, where small stations aren't able to get the advertisers, because the advertisers, certainly the large advertisers, would rather put one low pot of money to one big company rather than spread it around lots of small ones.
Yeah. It's a lot less hassle, isn't it?
Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay, so I've been listening to what everyone is saying.
More than most people do.
Yeah, I know. That's got to be bad. Really bad. Anyhow, what it comes down to for me after listening to what everyone is saying is, while I love free because the price is awesome, and while I love the idea of open source because you have excited people supporting a product, I'm actually more comfortable with paid services. I want to give someone or some company my money to support the development and maintenance of whatever the product or service is that I want to use, because I don't trust that companies like Google are going to keep free services around. Matter of fact, I think Feedburner is next to get cut, which is going to freak out a lot of podcasters, but I really think it's on the chopping block. Yeah. And when it comes to the open source products, while there's a lot of amazing stuff out there, I don't have time to start fiddling and tweaking and modifying open source options to fit my needs. I want to pay someone to do it for me. And I may be kind of an outlier in this respect, but I am totally okay with giving companies and giving developers my money so that they continue to support the tools that I need to do my job.
I think there's a good point in that. And I think I do understand it, because I think it's at the point where your competence just completely and entirely runs out. I have spent the last few months building myself a mobile camera platform, which I've finally got to fly thanks to the help of Paul King, at PG Koenig on Twitter, if you want to follow him. But my learning curve has been vertical with that, but it's something where I could learn. I haven't learned any code for the board that I've got, which is open source and Arduino based, but I've learned about power to weight ratios, and I've learned about power systems to get the right balance of weight of battery with milliamp hours with voltage of motors. And I've got that free. And there's people online that sell a calculator that you can put in. This is how big it is. This is how much it's going to weigh. This is how many motors there are. Tell me what I need to buy. But I looked at those and I thought, no, I'm not going to pay for those. And it wasn't because I was being tight. I just thought, no, I should learn this stuff. And I've gone out and learnt it, and I've learnt it free of charge by reading stuff that's freely available online from educational sources and people who were good enough to write something that would help explain it to me in simple terms. So it's a bit of both.
That's the whole point. I think that's in essence in terms of actually open source. A lot of the stuff that's open source is by people that are self-taught.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're
hobbyists and enthusiasts.
They've got a need. And you know, that they've, or somebody they know has got a need for something, and they have, okay, they have a love of actually learning it, and they can put those skills to use.
Mm.
And that's awesome.
And to take your point, Jeff, about being willing to pay somebody to do that, I'd actually much rather, if I was in a situation where I wasn't a techie and I, you know, had a business and I needed a tool to do a job, I'd much rather pay somebody who's going to take some open source software and develop that into something that can be used to fulfill the need, because I know it's actually got a durability. They've got access to source code. They can make sure that stuff's going to be around in 10 years time. You know, if you've got a piece of equipment that does a job, you don't think, oh, okay, just because it's actually not running the latest tools, I'll upgrade it. I'm a firm believer. If you've got a tool that does a job and it still does the job 10 years later, leave the blooming thing alone.
Which is the point that Google really was doing a great job from a practical sense, but yeah, they weren't making any money off it. So.
But the point is, Google, for whatever reason, control that. Mm. You know, we as the community have got no say. What they could have done is they could have said, okay, we're going to can this. We'll put it into open source and we'll allow people to develop it so that it can be kept going, but we're not going to have any responsibility for it. That would have been the sensible thing to do, because then the community could have picked it up and kept it going for the people that actually want to use it.
But the problem with that is that works to the extent whereby Google also, as well as providing the technology, provide the back-end systems to host and to control and to monitor, you know, to keep track of all the stuff it's reading. So when you read it on one device, it keeps track of the other. Who's going to pay for that?
But the point is that at least it still gives the community the option, so that if they want to, you know, provide the tools and the know-how to actually enable people to set up servers. So for instance, if I wanted to, you know, take for example WordPress, you know, mm-hmm. it doesn't work on its own. You actually have to install it on a domain, and you have to configure it and do things mm-hmm. with it. That's the whole point. You know, if they were to say, right, okay, we're not going to use it and we're not going to support it anymore, but there it is, guys. You know, and then somebody could actually, you know, a community could take that and provide instructions on how you actually set it up, configure it, if you want to use it on a server or whatever. And then at least you then got the choice of doing that.
I've got an interesting a comparison with that one, because we have a few years ago, just when Twitter was first starting, I was lucky enough to be one of the first million or so people to use it. And then someone said, look, Twitter's closed source. You might like to try Identica, IDENTI.ca, which is, I've just been there and it's still going. And that is an open source social network kind of thing. But it hasn't caught on because, one, I mean, you can host an Identica server on your own device, or you can use the Identica servers that they provide. So that is an ideal model. But I guess you've almost got people to sort of move house. And let's face it, Google have done a great job with their export tools. I can't remember what it's called now, but the... whatever it's called, the thing where you can actually take all your stuff off Google and run away with it. If you can't take it off, you can take a copy of all the stuff that Google have got and walk away with it and import it onto your own system.
Yeah, Google Takeout.
Do Google Takeout, that's right. But they won't provide you with your own system that reminds you of what you had before. And I guess that's only a small leap, isn't it? And hopefully they will do that. But we live in hope.
Last word goes to Cosmic Vibe in the chat room. Yeah, agreed. You can go back to open source software 5 to 10 years later after it was last touched and still keep it going. You can move it to new OSs. With closed sources software, then you end up buying a new version, not for the features, but just to keep going on with the next OS.
Amen.
Hallelujah, brother.
Yeah, so you perpetuate the continuation of Windows when you've got no control over it. If Microsoft said that you've got to have the new version, then you've got to have it.
There you go.
Microsoft hasn't been able to make that work. They want to tell everyone to have the new version, but they're still having to support older versions and sell older versions of Windows.
Yeah,
which
okay. I hear what you're saying, but you see the principle of where I'm coming from.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I think the thing with Vista that they got there was the fact that as soon as they had so many customers who were waiting to upgrade, and when Vista got such a bad reputation, all of those customers said, no, we're not upgrading. And they budgeted for upgrade, and they never got it. And the market voted with its feet. And when you've been that successful, the market becomes an incredibly powerful set of individuals if they can coordinate, which they kind of did through people writing out Vista's crap.
Do you think, I mean, I always think the classic example, never mind Windows, is Office. You know, I mean, how many versions of Office have we used over the years? Most of the features that they add into it each time they do it, we never use. Most of us only use the basic set of 20 or 30 features in the product that we use when the first version came out. The only reason why Microsoft had done that is either because they want to put a new UI on it, which makes no difference from a point of view of using it at all, or because they're saying, okay, fine, you know, somebody said, okay, we need a revenue stream. How can we do it? Oh, let's bring out a new version of Office.
It is their revenue stream now, isn't it? Office, that's purely what it is.
Exactly, but that's what I'm saying. It's about the control is with not with user.
I don't want to hijack it. See, the thing with Office, okay, I always thought using Office in the office, I'll never be able to be without Word and Excel and whatnot. And since when I got my iPad, because there was no alternative for Word or Excel, I had to go without, and I ended up using Google Docs. And now for me, Google Docs is enough, and I don't think I'll ever have to go back to Word.
That's good.
Until they get rid of Google Docs.
Yeah, absolutely. That'll be
more likely they turn it into a paid model to Office 365.
But like Jeff says, I don't mind paid models. As long as they're going to be around, great.
Okay, yeah. So now on the Office 365 thing, this is where Microsoft has finally figured out how they can get people to continue to pay for Office without having to do superficial changes and then call it a new version. And that's the subscription model. Mm. And that's exactly where they've wanted to go for a very long time. And they've finally figured out how to make it work. And I think it was Adobe that showed them how. Because Adobe's been pushing for a long time to take all of its apps from standard licensing to subscription with Creative Cloud.
Yeah.
They made the move, and then Microsoft was like, sweet, now we can do it. And
I think both of those companies are going to catch cold.
We can live in hope. Mm. Because I am not a fan of my business apps that probably have mission critical add-ons that will break with updates being controlled through a software subscription where now I'm getting app updates whether I want them or not.
Yeah. In a few hours, I just want to get this story in before we finish because we've already been going an hour, but in a few hours they will be officially launching the Samsung Galaxy S4. And there's some pictures have leaked out today of what it's going to look like. And if these are true, wow.
Your head's turning, isn't it?
Oh, mate, I went to it was my wife's birthday and my daughter's birthday a couple of weeks ago. And I said to my wife, what do you want to do for the birthday? She said, I want to go to the zoo. Okay, let's go to the zoo. So we went to the local zoo and we're all walking around. And I walked into the gorilla enclosure and I got my iPhone out and I got my little G12 as well. And I tried to zoom in and take some nice pictures and footage of the gorillas running around. And the girl next to me was shooting some video, zoomed in with her Galaxy S3, and it was beautiful. It looked gorgeous on screen. It was crystal clear, nice and sharp, good saturation on the colours. And when I never said, "Is that an S3? She looked at me like I was going to try and molest her. And I wasn't even in Leicester. So there you go. But the Galaxy S3 looked absolutely stunning. And so if this thing is everything it's cracked up to be and the features are as they're suggesting they're going to be, I really could go quite
happily. Can you believe the screen is 0.3 of an inch smaller than the Galaxy Note, the first Galaxy Note that came out? It's a 5.0 inch screen. So it's literally that much smaller than a Note.
Yeah,
you're gonna... mental, the fact that the bezel has obviously shrunk to such an extent you can still hold it.
Mm.
You're going to have to wait.
I'd really
though.
Like to try this phone out.
Yeah.
Like pop the SIM card out of my iPhone 5 and pop it into an S4 and use it for a couple of weeks and just see what I think.
What you want to do, Jeff, is go and stand next to a young lady in the zoo.
I heard that's a really great way to pick up on chicks. Yeah.
She was, oh, no, she probably wasn't Careful. 18. It wasn't like that. Stop it. You'll get me you'll get me looking for an insanity plea. And the other thing was Andy Rubin has left Android. And I just wanted a quick take on whether you think this is mooey serious or whether it was a natural evolution of employee.
I think it's too early to say yet what the impact is.
We covered that story then. That's good. I got 5 stories in tonight. Huzzah. There we go.
Finally.
This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2. You guys have been really supporting UK2. They say they get great traffic through from our website. Lots of you are using the offer codes. You're saving yourselves a fortune and you're giving the business to UK2. And UK2, as a result, keep us afloat. We don't have sponsors. We don't have anyone who picks up bills. We have got a donation system. We've paid a few things out. So the Gamers Show, when they look at reviewing the games, they hire them from Love Film. So the donations that we get pay for the Love Film subscription so that they can get the games to do the reviews for them. We pay Robert to write a blog for us when he's got time. But unfortunately, he hasn't at the moment because he's got a new job. All the subscriptions that you send in go back into the network. We don't pay for they don't go out to anything else. They buy the equipment for the studio if it needs replacing. We're getting to the stage we're going to need a new Mac soon because one of the Macs in the cupboard is starting to ail somewhat. So donations really help us. If you could give us a donation, there's a banner on the website. You can either take that email address and give us a subscription donation, which is $5 or $10 a month, or you can give us a bulk donation if you want to just buy us a Mac. There you go. Send us the money and we'll buy a Mac Pro or something like that just to run a Skype line. But that's the only way we get any revenue. The UK2 service that we have would cost us £450 a month, which we don't get that many donations each month. So please keep supporting UK2 because otherwise we go away. If we lose their bandwidth, we don't have the money to pay for it, plain and simple. Sorry. Thanks very much. Right. It's time for the cool thing, and I think we're going to have a good one this evening. James, start us off.
Two little ones this week. The first one is free. We like free stuff. I do like those. I think you call them the morning motion games. And I found a really lovely, charming one this week. It's a single finger one. So it's one of those ones where you only need one hand to play. And it's called Whale Trail Frenzy, or Whale Trail for the iOS device, and it's no different to those old helicopter games where you used to sort of have to fly through up and down through the little obstacles and stuff like that. But this one is just so pretty, and it's got a lovely soundtrack. I won't ruin it by playing it, but it is a really nice little game. One of the ones you sort of give your plate, you give your machine, give your iPad, give your Nexus to a little kid to play with for 10 minutes to keep them quiet. So Whale Trail, type that into your search engine. The second thing is, I don't know if you've seen these posts on forums and stuff. They have these little gifts at the bottom that denote the kind of... They're like kind of extended smileys. So if someone's got a shocked expression, they have a little five-second GIF from a film with somebody looking shocked. And there's a website called replygif.net, which is a collection of as many of those as you possibly could ever want. And it's, you know, it's everything from Dumb and Dumber to Doctor Who. Has little clips of them. And, they, I mean... CompuServe could make a fortune of them if they still existed and B, they were claiming on the rights for GIF. But replygif.net, just watch them for 10 minutes because they're quite amusing and then realise that you've probably seen them countless times this week.
Excellent. I like the first one. That sounded really cool.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Excellent. Good man. Thank you. Mr. Gamut, do you have anything cool for us?
I absolutely do. And it's thanks to Johnny Winter, because I can't figure out how to do math between time zones with daylight saving change. Time dot is.
There goes my pick.
Oh, sorry, dude.
Who seconded? There we go.
Yeah. And it's awesome because it shows you, you can set it for whatever time zone you want to be the main time zone and then set up additional time zones to monitor. So like right now, I'm looking at what time it is for me. It is 3:37 in the afternoon, which means that it's 9:37 in the evening for you guys in the UK. And this is exactly the kind of math help that I need because I went through US public school and I need stuff like time.is.
No, that's it doesn't help that we don't change time zones at the same time. You're 2 weeks ahead. So you kind of get into a routine and then all of a sudden it's out of kilter just for 2 weeks and then it goes back again. So we get this every year.
You know, this whole time zone or time daylight saving time change thing, it's just a giant bucket of crap for me. Just give me one time. Leave it the same all year round. I can figure out what time it is where you live. I can figure out what time I'm supposed to get up in the morning. I don't care if it's dark or light, early or late. Well, I don't care. I just need a standard time.
No, we even as far as Glasgow, though, I mean, you're on quite a lot lower latitude than we are. So it's a bit different. But if you look at somewhere even just like Glasgow, there's a huge difference between the south and the north of England. And at 8 o'clock, 8:30 in the morning, if we didn't do the time change in the winter, they'd be still dark. So it's.
I don't care.
It's bad enough. You go even further, further than Glasgow, and you go up to Inverness, and you're even worse.
Standardized.
I mean, we're lucky in the UK that we only have one time zone.
Yeah. True.
UK yeah, we have multiple time zones and UK some states that don't honor the daylight saving change.
Yeah, Arizona doesn't move.
I have two direct time zones.
Oh, dear.
Drinking time and nearly drinking time.
Good man. Sarah, what's your pick up?
Just as a quick add-on to Jeff's cool thing, there's a years ago when I used to use Firefox, there's a great plugin called Fox Clocks, which does exactly the same thing. And displays allows you to pick cities or countries with different time zones, and it will display all of them in the status bar in your browser. It's really good.
Excellent.
That's not my cool thingy, by the way. My cool thingy is, some of you probably know, I've got my Nexus 10 this week, which is I'm still going through. But one of the apps I've discovered this week, purely by chance, is something called My Script Calculator. And I don't know if you guys have
ever used this. Oh, that is so awesome.
It's a new discovery for me, and I must admit, it's you know, obviously because of what I do, I'm essentially a programmer, so I do a lot of math and stuff, and I'm pretty good at doing stuff in my head, but this is fantastic because half the time I can't be bothered to write it down, and it actually allows me to just, you can just, oh god damn, things gone off. but I don't know if you can actually see it, but you can actually write any, you wouldn't believe the sums that you can actually put in this thing. And I just actually found out it actually supports you could do sines and tangents and use pi in formulas and all sorts of things like this, do squares and things, and you just literally write it on there and it evaluates it. And I must admit, having played with it quite a bit, I actually found it's probably about 95% accurate, which is good enough for me. Whew. And it's free. I don't know if it's available on
stunningly awesome.
Cosmic Vibe agrees.
It started on iOS. Mm-hmm. And actually, the decimal accuracy I have to do a little bragging here. The decimal accuracy increased a few weeks ago with an update, and it was after one of my writers, John Modellaro, did his review, and he's like totally into calculators. And so his big complaint was not enough accuracy in the decimal places. And so they did an update for him that increased the accuracy. So you're welcome.
Excellent. Thank you. And Carl, what do you have for us, sir?
The only pick I've got this week is the iMac 27-inch with 3 terabyte dry thing that my stepdad just got, and I'm not in the least bit jealous of.
It does look like a really nice machine, doesn't it?
Oh, it's lovely.
It's got the Fusion Drive.
Came tonight, and he's never had a Mac before, yeah. So he asked me to set it up and help him like sync all his contacts, Google contacts, and stuff like that. And I said, there you go. And he goes, well, what do I do with it? And I go, anything you want. I've got to go and do a show now. Bye.
Okay. Bugger.
Oops. So I'm guessing he's just been using Google Chrome all night long to surf websites.
Excellent. He's been setting up all his RSS feeds.
He's still trying to figure out XBMC.
Yes, Fusion Drive. So he did get the Fusion Drive thing. So
bet that's fast to start up.
Wait to see how that plays out.
Yeah, good. Give us a report, please, mate. Write us a review. Stick it in the review section.
I don't get time to write anymore.
It's a shame. It's a shame.
Yeah, I thought I was going to do one on my Nexus 10, but never got time.
My pick is the Willy.
Sorry?
It's the Willy. That's what it's called. It's the Willy. It's been sent to me by Insanely Great Products. They've asked me to review it, which I will do. I need to have a play with it for a bit longer. But that's the Willy. There
you're
going to
play with your Willy for a bit longer.
I'm going to play with my Willy as long as I like. Yep. Now, that's the Willy, and it's dead interesting because what it is for your iPhone or your smartphone in general, and it's got two suckers on it, one on either side, and it's got a base, and if you're on your desk, you just plug it straight onto your iPhone, there you go, and then you put it down on your desk, and it's brill.
Okay.
Right, but here's the thing. Because of the fact it's got another sucker on the other side, I've just pulled it to pieces. Shit. there we go. Because it's got another sucker on the other side, you don't have to worry about having a car thing, because what you do is that sucker fits on your windscreen, and then that sucker holds your iPhone. See? And it works. I've had it on. The other thing is, if you turn it round that way, then you can put your iPhone on it, and you can put it on your shoulder, and you can carry on talking while you're holding it up and sat at your desk.
You know what else you can do with that? And I learned this when I was talking with the people a couple months ago. Since it has the two suction cups, take it into a coffee shop or wherever it is you want to hang out with your friend. And if you're playing a game together, set each of your smartphones on one of the suction cups. And now you can have them set. You can have your phone set up between you and play your game together.
That's a good idea. I like that. Very good.
They do some really cool stands.
They do. I've got the iPad one as well to sit and review yet, but I'll do that another week. The thing is as well with this, you sit and think, well, it's iPhone, that's it. It basically anything that's got a flat back, and it's even strong enough to support an iPad. There you go. An iPad mini, admittedly, but you wouldn't support the big thing. But it stands it up and it holds it, and it's just fine. So I like it. It's $20. So £15. There you go. The Willy. Play with your Willy.
Wonder why it's called the Willy.
I've no idea, because it there's no reference there to anything to do with Willy. So in any way, shape or form.
It makes me laugh, and that's good enough.
There you go. That's it. That's the reason it's called the Willy. James, where can we get a hold of you, sir?
Sorry, I was just playing with that script my script calculator. That is brilliant.
No
fun.
One listens to me. Damn.
Sorry, I was completely. I haven't got an iPhone. You can find me on. Which social network should we try today? Oh, Twitter. Syzygy. SYZYGY.
Johnny in the chat room says it's a Willy with suckers, the perfect present for persons who has too much shit already. That's a good point. Yeah. Maybe closer than you know. Jeff, where are you, sir?
Well, first, you can find me at Mac Observer. Since I'm managing editor over there, so I'm there a lot. You can find me on Twitter, so it'd be twitter.com/jgamut. Same thing at app.net. And have I told you guys about my coffee shop blog?
No.
I don't. Ooh. Okay.
Publicize.
So I spend a lot of time hanging out in Starbucks, and I see a lot of really stupid things happen. And it got to the point where I couldn't keep them to myself. So I started tweeting about them, and everyone wanted to know more. So I started a blog called Fresh Brewed Tales. And so I write about all the stupid things I see happening in coffee shops at that site. So it's freshbrewtales.com. And I always have a photograph to go with my little posts. And if I can't get a photograph, then I'll just go ahead and draw it. So you'll get an artist's interpretation for some of the things that I see.
Excellent. Go along and have a look, people. Excellent stuff. Sarah, where are you, mate?
I'm on the Twitters at SarahJaneUK, and hopefully this weekend on the F1 show on the British Tech Network.
Yeah, we need to figure out when we're going to do that. Yeah, it's Sunday morning, isn't it? So it's Saturday night time, early morning-y.
Yeah, I think it's about
holy hell, I'm not getting up that early, unless I'm up at 2:30 like I've been all this week. So there we go. Camera didn't change, do apologise. So we'll have the... we shall have the F1 show probably, hopefully Sunday night, maybe Monday night.
Yeah, one of the two.
One of the two. We'll see. Carl, where are you, mate?
I'm on Twitter at Claw001 and on a media show, which I think we're recording this Sunday. So we'll be back next week. And meant to be doing a here and there show, but if anyone in the chat room wants to Twitter Missy to say, please stop being busy so we can do a show...
I'm going to say, I haven't seen you, because normally if you tweet that out, I retweet it, but I haven't seen you
tweet it. Missy's been doing photography things, hasn't she?
She'll never. So if anyone who's in the chat room now wants to tweet out to Missy, don't mention me in the tweet, for God's sake.
There's no future in photography.
Hurry up so we can do a show.
Yeah, we should be Facebooking her.
That's true, actually.
Being unfaithful to Carl.
Oh no, steady on.
Everyone's unfaithful to me. I'm used to it.
Excellent. We will be back next week. I'm Ewan Rankin. Get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter and app.net. We'll be back again next week. Tom Merritt's here next week, so that should be a fun packed show. And we'll be here with the photo show tomorrow, and we'll be here with the Mac show as well. Not next week, but the week after, there won't be any shows because I'm going lonely. Going to have a relax. We're not doing anything.
Oh, well, that's good, because I wasn't going to be around either. That's Easter weekend, isn't it?
Oh, both of you are gone. Well, people will talk.
No, I'm on holiday with my wife. She won't.
No, I won't.
We'll see you next week. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening.
Cheerio.
Bye-bye.